Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Imaginings, 25th Anniversary Collection, by Julie E. Cherneda. Narrated by Alex Picard. A Grateful Introduction. 25 years as a published author of science fiction and fantasy. So many words. A goodly number of prepositions, and many invented. Printed and bound. Carried and sold. Millions of words. Words shaping ideas. Ideas pulled from my imagination. What I affectionately call my hindbrain. And that's the struggle. The pulling in shape, not the imagination. My head's full of sparks and weird info bits and, ooh, shiny what-ifs. It's like dust motes in a sunbeam. I've dark notions and breathless wishes, odd naughty ponders, and deep, glowing obsessions. In sum, a vibrant, ever-evolving mess of possibilities that makes me happy and has no reason whatsoever to be brought together into sensible storylines. Other than you, dear reader. Thanks for that. I mean it. I'm truly grateful for what you've made me do. Those motes of imagination matter only to me until they're caught by words. Words becoming yours, only to morph again as your imagination adds its sparks and weird info bits, and the ideas take off in directions that would never occur to me, not being you. How fabulous is that? As for the struggle I mentioned, to go from imagination to story. The billions of words tossed aside like so much dryer lint. The anxiety and doubt and occasional shrieks of joy, with tears if I've succeeded, that hasn't altered in a quarter century, and I suspect never will. Thanks, dear listener, for those as well. Your love of my stories has helped make me who and what I am. You and my wonderful editor and publisher, Sheila E. Gilbert of Daw Books, and everyone there who guided my words from glittery dust clouds to polished books. My mom would say, it doesn't matter what you do, so long as you do your best. A valid point about enduring a boring summer job, to be sure. A wonderful framework for being creative. Do your best. What comes of it doesn't matter as much as the effort and care put in. Learning to be better each time, or at least not make the same mistakes. Sorry, Sheila. Striving to master third person, and don't get me started on my decades working out semicolons. I used one here and now regard it with great trepidation. A big part, for me, of being a fiction writer was accepting the challenge to write what wasn't comfortable or easy. Every editor named in this book is responsible for making me sweat and suffer, for encouraging me to write what I hadn't known I could. Thank you, one and all. 25 years. I've an agent now, the esteemed Sarah Megabo, KT Literary, who encourages me too. Thank her. This collection was Sarah's idea. And Rogers, who went on to capture my hindbrain in his imaginative cover art. I'd like to point out visual artists get away without words, and how is that fair? My thanks to Sin Wise, who read the novella for me in first draft. I'm grateful for every one of you, new readers and those with me all along. Since Daw Books has kept my novels in print, here are some of the harder-to-find stories. I'm proud of them all, if still somewhat bewildered that they have become words and escaped me. I am delighted to hand them to you. Julie E. Cherneda. 1997. First Contact, Inc. by Julie E. Cherneda. Author's note. My first published fiction came about entirely by accident. I'd my first novel on submission to Daw Books with Sheila E. Gilbert, and went with my family to the 1996 World Fantasy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin, to meet her in person. While that didn't happen, what did? My friend Josepha Sherman and I met in a bar with Martin H. Greenberg and Larry Segriff of Technobooks to pitch an anthology. They liked our idea but had something similar in the works. First Contact. If I could write a short story for that in, say, 3 days, they'd take a look. So I did, writing it on our drive home. And to my astonishment, Marty bought it. A week later, Sheila bought my novel. Wow. The anthology came out the summer before my book. During our vacation, we came across a copy of First Contact in a bookstore in PEI. And, yes, we danced for joy in the aisle. First Contact Custom Simulation PC-91, Base Borden. Copyright, First Contact Incorporated. Licensed for military use only. Humanity's big moment. And a moment was how long it lasted. They'd run. Lieutenant Cortland, the Iron Man himself, had been the first to break, flinging from him the state-of-the-art translator they'd brought to this meeting place with such care. His boots driving deep into the mud with each stride, so that he lurched from side to side in an agonizing effort to put distance between himself and it. Lieutenant Desroches had hesitated a second longer, staring into the writhing mass of filaments, as if somehow this would help her find a point of correspondence, a suggestion of a face. Then she shuddered and whirled to follow Cortland. Lieutenant Smith, the one who'd barely made the final cut for this mission, the one considered the weakest link, remained the longest. This had more to do with his complete conviction that his legs wouldn't obey him than any desire to stay within reach of that thing. His paralysis left him with the alien's first tentative reach in his direction.
"So I tell the colonel, you pick the partner, we just do the music."
Nance's pale eyes gleamed through her ragged fringe of bangs.
"And what did he say to that?"
Her fingers continued to search for a disc among the piles of post-it-coated pages layered on her desk. The keyboard balanced on her lap shifted with every movement, as though trying to save itself from falling on the floor and being lost among even more piles of journals and clippings. For a company listed among the top 5 software producers, the office of its CEO and resident genius looked a great deal more like a newsroom from the early 50s than the site of executive splendor. Henry Fergus, graphics whiz and sales rep, when he wasn't fussing over hardware, dropped his voice into a fair imitation of Colonel Dunwoody's growl.
"Your so-called music sent 3 of my best officers into therapy. Why should I pay for that?"
"To which you said?" Henry flopped into the swivel chair that doubled as a printer stand the odd time they needed hard copy.
"You know what I said."
2 fingers tugged a folded check from his pocket.
"You pay for it because it worked."
Nance, Dr. Nancy Vicenza, to those who were not her friends, pushed her hair out of her eyes for a moment.
"Henry, driving people crazy is not what we do here."
"No?"
"No. They do that all by themselves."
She found the disc she was after and dropped it into the drive, fingers now jabbing at keys. Henry glanced around in vain for the mouse. She'd lost it again, he bet, or was using it as a foot pedal.
"We just tap, tap, illustrate, tap, 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 the circumstances, tap."
He kicked off his shoes, thinking nostalgically of the days not long ago when he'd made all his sales calls in sandals. Even better, when most of his business contacts had been over the vidphone. He'd really loved putting on that shirt, tie, and jacket over his bike shorts. Pants and dress shoes. The cost of success.
"So, what's up?"
She looked up from the screen as though startled to find him still there. Henry was used to that. He blanked out the world himself when there was a glitch to track down.
"Last-minute upgrade for the new theme park in Australia."
He whistled.
Way to make those bucks. We can retire soon.
Which was a joke. Nance had no clearer concept of how much the company, and they, were worth these days than he did. There were people on the next floor who kept track, annoying people in suits who drove better cars than he did, and who routinely forgot to tell the new staff that he and Nance paid their salaries. That always messed up the lunch hour softball games. And retire? Just when they could at last actually own the best systems for themselves? Just when they could do what they loved doing all day long? Being paid for it was convenient.
Pardon?
Nance looked innocent. Convenient that the park wants this particular upgrade. I've been wanting to play with it a bit more. Henry winced. Nance's idea of playing usually involved roping him and anyone else still breathing into the VR chamber at ungodly hours.
What did you have in mind?
He sighed, slipping down into a more comfortable slouch, interested despite the likely unpleasant consequence to his own workload. First Contact Custom Simulation DC-101, Smithers. Copyright, First Contact Incorporated. Licensed for home experience only. Dark red blood settled into the star-shaped cracks in the windshield, forming a network of pleasing regularity. Mildred Smithers, grandmother of three and leading voice in the Real Goldies choir, shut off the still-racing engine of her car with a satisfied nod. "Gotcha again, you bastard," she said primly, glancing around as if to reassure herself that this descent into rough language had been safely unnoticed. But she was alone, of course. She pushed up her bifocals to better see the face of her watch. Not bad. Shaved at least a minute off her response time. Practice makes perfect, as she always reminded her good-for-nothing son-in-law. For a moment, she considered the lifeless form draped over what was left of the hood of her car. Pity you couldn't buy the same experience a little closer to home, she thought. Then again, the whole point of the exercise was to be ready to act, something she knew full well her family would depend on her to do. When you get here, she promised the tentacled being her driving skill had shattered into two equal halves, Mildred Smithers will be ready. The next morning, Henry poked his head into Nance's office. Nothing appeared to have changed, unless you counted the accumulation of dead leaves under the plant cowering on the windowsill.
How's the Aussie upgrade?
There was an incoherent grumble from behind the monitor. He used his knuckles to sound a drum roll on the doorframe.
Made a coffee run.
Half a face showed, the one eye looking wistful. Bagels?
With blueberry cream cheese.
The eye blinked slowly. I hope Megan appreciates you. Henry, unable to find a clear surface for his offering, chose the most stable pile of paper and set the tray down with care.
She appreciates me. It's the rest of my family that has doubts.
Nance popped the lid from one of the coffees, blew away the steam, and took a huge swallow, looking as though the caffeine was heading straight to her bloodstream. Henry was convinced her mouth had an asbestos lining.
So, how's the sim?
He persisted.
Mustafa said you've been on it all night.
She gave him a condescending look over a mouthful of cheese-drifted bagel.
How would he know? Mustafa's idea of getting in early is any time after the traffic's died down on the freeway.
Another gulp of coffee.
It's weird.
His eyes went to the wall unit behind Nance's chair, loaded with dusty jars of pickled insects and mollusks, interspersed with museum-quality replica skulls of various mammals, and tied bundles of bird feet. Fortunately, the cleaning staff had insisted the eyeball collection go home, despite Nance's protests about the importance of biological reality to her simulations.
Weird how?
Nance stood up, stretching with a twisting motion that made audible cracks. They keep adding to the specs. She handed him a set of faxes, clipped together with a clothespin Santa her niece had made last year. Nance kept everything.
Bit late for this many changes. Park opens the day after tomorrow.
Henry started leafing through the pages. Each one contained one minor requested change. There must have been about 20, sent at roughly equal intervals over the past day and night.
You've told them modifications on the fly like these are extra, I hope.
Head half inside a sweater, Nance muttered darkly,
I told them to stop after the first two. I hate being interrupted. But they wouldn't.
She pushed her head out and glared fiercely at Henry. Not to mention that what they're asking for is silly.
Silly?
Henry looked more closely at the top page and read aloud,
The pupil of each eye must be an unreflective black, not luminous orange.
The next page.
Four appendages in total, mobile at a sequence of six joints.
He tried not to grin.
They are being quite specific. Somebody's had a nightmare lately.
Nance dropped back into her seat.
I'll give them nightmares.
First contact custom simulation PC-225. Fernandez. Copyright, First Contact, Inc. Licensed for home experience only. He wasn't sure what had disturbed his sleep. It was an older building. Pipes and joists had a tendency to be musical in changing weather. But that wasn't it this time. Juan sat up, trying to listen more carefully. There. A scraping sound. From outside. He yawned and lay back down. The old elm out front was wide enough to kiss the bricks with an east wind. He'd remind the super about having it trimmed at the next tenants' meeting. Snick. Skitter. Skitter.
That wasn't the tree.
Juan had his feet on the cold floor this time, hand racing for the light by his bed. Sounded like a cockroach convention. He hit the switch and found himself facing what he'd never even dreamed of. Equally startled, his visitor scampered from the now open patio doors to the top of his bureau in a ripple of reflective scales. For a seeming eternity, the only sound was a sigh of wind through the doors and Juan's heart hammering in his ears. Then the creature shivered, a motion that made the plates covering its gaunt body touch together with a faint, bell-like tinkle. It had eyes, two large and one smaller, centered on a triangular head. Around its neck was a wreath made of autumn leaves. Juan reached slowly for the phone at his bedside. When he brought it to his ear, there was a soft voice already speaking to him. The creature tilted its head and settled more comfortably on the bureau. Juan Fernandez, whispered the soft voice. I have chosen you to contact first of all your kind. Your music has touched even the stars. Play for me, and let there be peace between us. Numbly, his eyes never leaving his visitor, Juan put down the phone and reached for the saxophone on its stand beside his bed. He'd always known he'd make it big one day. Not necessarily this big, but big.
What's the original design base?
Standard PC-30, peaceful contact following initial suspicion, overtones of economic congruence of mutual benefit. Nothing flashy. Nance sent the 15th paper airplane of the hour soaring overhead.
Not until they started this last-minute nonsense.
Henry caught it before it hit his ear and unfolded the paper to read the request.
Strands of keratin 30 centimeters long to be attached behind each auditory organ?
Nance raised her eyebrow.
We are definitely dealing with someone who knows their biology, if not how to stay within a budget.
Hair, Henry. They want me to put a hair on its head. First contact custom simulation FC-1301.
Grant R. Copyright First Contact Incorporated. Licensed for home experience only.
There was no place left to hide, Roger decided grimly, his bike sucking fumes as it coasted off the deserted highway. He could stand and fight here and now, or die without ever seeing the face of his enemy. Funny. He hadn't imagined death would come as a cliché. Had it only been yesterday? The aliens had been so well prepared, their technology so superior. The only wonder was that crumbs of humanity like himself still existed on the planet. A crumb. What a joke on the world that he had lasted hours after the rest were obliterated. There was a whistle in the distance, the sound piercing and ominous as though it could summon hell's demons to chase him. And weren't they, despite their appearance of being only machines? He'd watched the trackers demolish a city block of apartments, an economical way of dealing with the vermin inside. He'd known better than to hide in the subways, too, having witnessed yet another set of machines burrowing into the streets, somehow fully aware of every crack that still harbored humankind. Roger no longer remembered how he escaped. There were too many other images in the way. Another whistle. This time an answer from the direction he'd vaguely hoped might be away from them. Roger considered his surroundings. The once blue sky smudged by the smoke from the city. The highway boiled away in places where cars had been targets. The landscape pitted and ruined overnight. He reached into the saddlebag of his bike and pulled out the gun he knew was there. Would he have the courage to end it for himself this time? Or would he have to wait for the mercy of the aliens to make it stop?
Good morning, fellow geniuses.
The door flew open as if propelled by a hurricane.
Have you started celebrating without me?
Mustafa, a man who rarely smiled before noon and then required an excuse to make the effort, was beaming from ear to ear. Henry and Nance traded knowing glances.
Cracked the blackjack table?
Nance asked.
Much better,
Mustafa announced. He pointed one pudgy finger at them and shook it.
You didn't check your mail again. When are you going?
Henry cut short what promised to be the usual diatribe about corporate responsibilities and other nonsense that had invaded their lives since home simulation machines had become the rage. With First Contact Incorporated, already poised for success with its custom VRs.
Tell us what we need to know, O Keeper of the Secret. Guess who's opening the Aussie theme park?
Nance scowled, which widened Mustafa's smile even farther.
Am I supposed to care? She growled. Some rock star or other.
Henry tisk-tisked.
You never think about sales. So who, Mustafa? Must be a good one to make you drool. The president.
Nance's head came around from its hiding place behind her monitor. Henry swallowed hard and managed what he hoped was a nonchalant,
pardon?
That cracked partway through the middle. He tried again.
Which president?
Mustafa positively glowed.
The president. You know. The first one to win a majority from every country? President Polemsky. He's going to open the park. Gets better, compadres. The Prez is apparently a fan of your work, Nance. He's going to be the first person to try your latest and greatest First Contact sim.
Henry and Nance dived for the pile of pages in the wastebasket, Henry winning by an arm's length.
No wonder you couldn't track down the source with the Aussies.
He gasped, trying to smooth the abused paper into order.
These must be straight from his office.
Whoa, there, Nance interjected uneasily.
That's a pretty big guess, Henry.
He shook his head, holding up the pages.
What time exactly did the president's office announce this?
Mustafa looked from one to the other of his bosses, his satisfied look fading into puzzled concern. as he saw the expressions on their faces.
At the 9 a.m. press conference yesterday, I eat you guys when I found out. Why?
Nance took the sheaf of faxes turned to airplanes from Henry. She found the first one. It was dated yesterday, 9:30 a.m. Their eyes met. I think I better input every one of these after all. Henry nodded slowly.
And I think we'd better have a look before it goes out.
First contact custom simulation PC-30 mod 352A. Australia's Down Under Theme Park Corporation. Copyright, First Contact Incorporated. Licensed for public on-location viewing only. Test run. Until today, he'd enjoyed flying. Sympathetic, but unable to understand why so many of his aides became white-knuckled with every air pocket. This flight was different. He wasn't sure whether his newfound anxiety stemmed from being the only living thing on board, or his destination. Likely both. He turned from the window and switched on the recorded briefing from his aides for the third time. The familiar voices were reassuring, edged though they were with unfamiliar tension. The arrangements had been made using numerical expressions that both sides understood. There was some negotiation required regarding the location of that critical first meeting. The home world was not as wet as that of the guest. And beauty was important. The meeting would be carried live on both planets. A good first impression would do wonders for the ultimate response from the public. Yet, despite concern and some honest fear of the unknown, there was goodwill. There was a sense of inevitability, too, that events would unfold regardless of the careful planning of governments. All that remained was the moment when strangers met. He'd studied the pictures, but nothing truly prepared one for such an encounter. Aides had informed him of what they understood to be appropriate alien protocol. No weapons, at least none in sight, was a reassuring common factor. Gifts might be misconstrued at this earliest point, and who knew what values they shared or didn't. What to wear? Best to err on the side of formality. No one liked to be slighted. And much of what transpired was meant purely for the viewers. His people had definite expectations of him, if not the one he met. They'd chosen a beach on an isolated, uninhabited island, large enough for automated transports to land. He set the controls as the techs had instructed, in order to set up the transmission and recording equipment. Each, visitor and host, had a designated half of the landmass for their preparations. The island was blessed with a central lagoon, lovely by any standard. Its beach was the designated meeting site. It could be reached by either representative in a short walk. He drew in a last deep breath of the salt-scented air. Took one last look at the technology that was his only link to his own kind, and prepared to make history.
Stop.
Henry hit the kill switch on the simulation and looked at Nance and Mustafa.
This is ordinary. It's dull. Some nice work on the scenery, but face it. First Contact Inc. makes its money on custom sims real enough to make you wet your drawers. Any of our competitors could do better than this.
Nance stopped him just by raising her eyebrows. We haven't reached the climax, Henry, and that's where most of the changes were made. Shall we? Henry muttered something to himself, but restarted the sim. First Contact Custom Simulation PC-30 Mod 352A. Australia's Down Under Theme Park Corporation. Copyright, First Contact Incorporated. Licensed for public on-location viewing only. Test run. He drew in a last deep breath of the salt-scented air, took one last look at the technology that was his only link to his own kind, and prepared to make history. The walk was too short. World leader or not, there was something inherently terrifying about this meeting, something that threatened his very grasp upon reality. before panic could truly overwhelm his entire...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?